Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Okay. That is it. I think everybody but Janine has probably seen that movie. Janine may have seen it. No, sure. You know what you're watching today?
I know, I was told.
All right. I'm sorry, will you forgive me? I love that scene. There's something wrong in the world. And they know it. The news headlines regularly speaks about the symptoms and the consequences of what's wrong in the world. And what's wrong in the world tempts you and I to use others for our selfish gains, tempts us to blame one another rather than solving problems. It tempts us to put ourselves first. And ultimately, when all these things work together or don't work together, the world's most vulnerable are left in harm's way. And here's the thing about the world. You can look out at the world and you can say, the world is incredibly beautiful. I mean, you look at creation, and I mean, if you've ever been anywhere like the Grand Canyon, and you look and you go, that's amazing. And then you turn and you're like, that's even more amazing. It can't get any better. And then you turn again. And you look and you go, man, the world is beautiful. And it's beautiful because God created that way. God created it with beauty, and he created life to flourish. But the world is also incredibly broken. And the world is not as it should be because sin has entered the world. There's something wrong in the world. I love that. He's like you felt it your whole life. You know it. And you can look around in the world and you can say, there's something wrong. You know? Now, there's good news that Jesus Christ has dealt a decisive blow to sin and a decisive blow to our enemy. Now, here's the bad news. Most people are fighting the wrong battle. They're fighting the wrong battle against the wrong enemy in the wrong way. And so I want to give an invitation this morning for those of you that are in here and that are online. And I can see like that list of people that are online. I want to invite you to fight the right battle. And I want to invite you to be a world changer. It's kind of surreal to think that you and I can do something this morning, today, that literally changes the world. So if you came here this morning and you didn't know anything about Barefoot Sunday, let me explain what we're going to do. Several of you have already brought up shoes, and that is an amazing amount of shoes. I'm a little bit worried about what Sydney's going to have and what we're going to do with those. Dean, I need to talk to you after church to see if you want to take a ride up to. Up to Jacksonville and drop off some shoes, by the way. But at the end of service, if you haven't brought forward shoes or you're wearing shoes that you would like to donate, so at the end, I'll invite you to come up and bring those up. You can take off the shoes and leave them up here at our makeshift altar. And here's the thing. All of the shoes that are up there and all the shoes that are going to be given, they're going to be donated to Souls for Souls, which I just think is an incredible program. Some of the shoes are going to be given to people that have small businesses, and they're going to repair the shoes so that they can sell those shoes. It's called micro enterprises. It gives the person dignity. It changes that person's life. It changes that family. It changes that community. It's an incredible idea. The other thing is some of those shoes, a high percentage of them, are going to go to people that do not own a pair of shoes. And by the way, my invitation is go barefoot at least a portion of the day. It's kind of an awkward feeling to think, people going to stare at me when I walk into this store? Because I'm not wearing shoes. Are they going to kick me out of this restaurant because I'm not wearing shoes? And you kind of get an idea of what some people have to go through on a daily basis. What's it like to not wear shoes? And so as we give those shoes, it affords people to do things like go to school, go to work, go out shopping. And my invitation all along has been, would you go barefoot for a day so somebody doesn't have to all year round? Now, many of you are sitting here thinking, I really like this idea. It's fascinating because people have been calling me on the phone all week and saying, hey, I really like what you're doing. We want to donate shoes. And so they've been dropping off shoes at in front of my house. And when I get home, there'll probably be more shoes there. And you think that's cool because you know we can help out someone. But some of you are also thinking, are we really changing the world, Don? I mean, is that like, you know, a little bit over the top? Are we really, you know, making this great difference? Yes, we are. We really are. What we're doing is very significant. And I want to look to Scripture to see what God has to say about the type of thing that we're doing right now. And since we're going to go through the book of Psalms, I've been reading Psalms for like the last couple weeks and just really digging in. And I came across a gem of a psalm. I read that through and I thought, that's what I'm preaching on Barefoot Sunday. So if you have a Bible and you want to follow along, we're at Psalms chapter 12, beginning at verse 1. If you don't have a Bible, it's up on the screen. Or we have extra Bibles. And if you don't own a Bible, feel free to take one of these home with you. Psalm chapter 12, beginning at verse 1. The Bible reads, "Help, O Lord, for the godly are fast disappearing. The faithful have vanished from the earth. Neighbors lie to each other, speaking with flattering lips and deceitful hearts. May the Lord cut off their flattering lips and silence their boastful tongues. They say, 'We will lie to our heart's content. Our lips are our own. Who can stop us?' And the Lord replies, 'I have seen violence done to the helpless, and I have heard the groans of the poor. Now I will rise up and rescue them, as they have longed for me to do. The Lord's promises are pure, like silver refined in a furnace, purified seven times over. Therefore, Lord, we know that you will protect the oppressed, preserving them forever from this lying generation. Even though the wicked spread about, and evil is praised throughout the land." And that's a great psalm. It's just loaded. It's powerful. And as I read through this psalm over and over this last week, I was thinking, this psalm was written 3,000 years ago. I thought, that sounds like the world we live in. I mean, it sounds like this could be like right in the newspaper of what's going on. It paints a picture of this world where the wicked prosper and evil is praised. Right? I mean that's what it's saying there. It's saying people look at things that are evil and they say, this is a good thing. This is a positive thing. And then it says that people are just lying to one another left and right. Hey, here's what I think is a fascinating thing, maybe a weird thing about lying that I've noticed, especially in this day and age of social media. People are really quick to share things that aren't true. And what's weird about that is even if you, because I've done this on occasion, I usually don't. I usually just roll my eyes and move on. But every once in a while, especially if the person's a person of influence, I'll say, hey, do you know what you're sharing isn't true? And I can tell you exactly why it's not true. And most of the time they say, well, yeah, but. It's like, yeah, so you know it's not true, but you have a truth that you want to promote by lying. And so they continue to share that, which sounds like this verse. And here's the strange thing, because a lot of people go, well, yeah, that's what the liberals do. Man, liberal, conservative, progressive, left, right, everywhere in between. The difference between lies is there's lies that we like and there's lies that we don't like. Yeah. And if it promotes my worldview and my agenda, a lot of times we're okay with that. And the psalmist David, he nails it. He says, neighbors lie to each other, speaking flattering lips and deceitful hearts. And there's times where, you know, I look at something and I go, I want that to be true, but it's not true. That's a lie, and it doesn't move the world forward. It doesn't move Jesus' agenda forward. Now, here's the fascinating thing about that. I don't want to hang out on lies all day. There's a couple of really fascinating things about this psalm. This psalm is a psalm of lament. You know, and a lament is kind of like, it's exactly what it is. It's one of those things where you say, God, everything's wrong. Everything's messed up. And these psalms of lament are, in this genre, they're normally followed by the psalmist saying, okay, it's not okay, and Lord, will you act on our behalf? God, will you respond to the injustice in the world? Now, what's fascinating and fairly unique about this psalm is God actually responds in the text. A lot of the other psalms, there's not a response from God. It's just a plea on our behalf. You know, where David will say, hey, these people all want to kill me. They're coming after me, and Lord, will you defend me? And this one, the Lord actually speaks up right in the psalm. And the Lord replies, verse 5, I'll just read it again. It says, I have seen the violence done to the helpless, and I have heard the groans of the poor. Now I will rise up and rescue them as they have longed me to do. Now, that's a really cool response, but it's not what I expected. Because the cry is, Lord, all these people are deceitful. All these people are lying. All these people are corrupt. And I expect God to say in there when he speaks, I'm going to deal with the liars. I'm going to deal with these corrupt people. Instead, he does something that the psalmist isn't even asking about. He says, I will care for, I will rescue the poor and the helpless. Which for me begs the question, why the poor? What? Why doesn't God answer directly and say, okay, I'm going to deal with these evil people? And don't get me wrong, I believe wholeheartedly he will. But why instead does he say, I'm going to care for the poor. I will avenge the poor. I will take care of them. Because the psalmist doesn't bring them up. God brings them up. Let me give you a couple reasons why I think God says, I'm going to care for the poor. First, when something happens in the world that's negative, think of like a natural disaster, think of a war, think about corruption in government. Who gets hurt the worst? The poor. When something goes wrong, you know, let's say there's an outbreak of the cold. You and I get a cold. The poor, they get pneumonia. Okay? That's kind of what happens in the world. Think about all over the world, we have a massive, massive refugee crisis. I'm not just talking about people immigrating. I'm talking about refugees that cannot go back home. The vast majority of those refugees are the extremely poor in the world. And the extremely poor are fleeing from violence. And here's the reality. The rich, which by the way, if you live in this country, you're rich. It's just a reality. You are the upper 2 percentile. But here's a reality for the rich. We are affected by violence. That is a reality. But the rich have means to protect themselves. The rich have means to safely relocate. The poorest of the poor, they are not afforded these things. And so when governments become corrupt, it's the poor that are hurt the most. Now, so secondly, let's talk about the poor and poverty. There's a great book by this guy. I'm going to have a quote of his up there. According to Byron Myers, author of Walking with the Poor, he says this. He says, poverty is a result of relationships that do not work, that are not just, that are not for life, that are not harmonious or enjoyable. Poverty is the absence of shalom and all its meaning. I think he's absolutely right. And I'm going to unpack that as to why I think that's right. So we started out this morning and we said, there's something wrong in the world. Right? And it's not the Matrix, by the way. That's not the problem. Sin has entered into the world, and sin has broken, has come between every relationship there is. And I want to think about the garden. Everything's perfect. Everything's in right relationship. The world is as God intended in the garden. Sin enters the world, and there are four relationships that are broken. This relationship with God the Father. That relationship is broken in the garden. The other relationships is this relationship. Relationship with one another. Remember, Adam and Eve, they're together. Sin enters the world. They start blaming each other. It all unravels from there. The created order is harmed when sin enters into the world. So you and I have a relationship with the created order, and that is broken as well. There's a fourth relationship. You have a relationship with yourself. That relationship is broken. Our bodies are dying. You ever notice that your relationship with your body isn't working as well as it used to when you were younger? That is a reality. And what happens when those relationships are broken, that's why there's poverty in the world. Now let me clarify something. I'm not saying that the poorest of the poor are worse sinners than you and I. What I'm saying is they experience more of this because of sin being in the world. And think about this. Okay, so when there's war, what is that? That's a broken relationship here. What's the result? Poverty. Think about famine. Famine is a broken relationship with creation. What does that create? Creates poverty. Think about if I have a broken relationship with my mind or my body. Well, that can create poverty, right? If I can't work, if I don't have the knowledge to do things, then poverty can come into my life. Now, see, we live in a wealthy place, and we don't experience the effects as much as others. But it's all about broken relationships. Are you getting the picture of how broken relationships create poverty? Now, here's something I believe strongly. If all those relationships are working as they should, there's no poverty. Now, here's the reality. It doesn't exist this side of eternity. It doesn't exist until Revelation chapter 21. And Revelation chapter 21 is a picture where all relationships are restored. That's what Jesus is about. He's about restoring relationships. That's what the cross is about. You know, Revelation 21, we're all before the throne. Every tribe, every tongue, every nation. This relationship is right. This relationship is right. God has restored the created order. God restores our minds, our bodies. That's why they talk about the lame walking and the blind seeing. Because God has restored all those things. There is no poverty in heaven because relationships are as they should be. So let's listen to Jesus. Listen to me speaking Jesus' words. I talked to him and he said, you do it. But this is his first recorded sermon in the scriptures. And it's Luke chapter 4, verses 18 and 19. So Jesus comes on the scene, and this is what he says. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to bring good news to the who?
Poor.
To the poor." Interesting. "He has sent me to proclaim to the captive that the captives will be released, and that the blind will see, and the oppressed will be set free, and that the time of the Lord's favor has come." Why? You ever ask that? Why is the gospel good news to the poor? I mean, isn't it good news to everybody? But Jesus specifically says, I brought good news to the poor. Well, here's why I think it's good news to the poor. The gospel is the good news. This is the definition that we use all the time. Gospel is the good news that God himself came to the earth to rescue and renew creation through Jesus Christ on our behalf. Jesus Christ defeated sin and death. I gotta look over and make sure the cross is actually over there. Sin and death on the cross. And this good news of Jesus is capable of transforming everything about a person. Their relationship, their community, their world. God is in the business of rescuing and restoring relationships. And here's the reality. When you and I verbally share this good news and live out the principles of this new and better kingdom that Jesus is establishing, we're joining him. We're actually partnering with Jesus in what he wants to do. That end goal, Revelation 21:5, where everything is as it should be. And Jesus goes out and he says, share this good news with everyone. He puts it this way in Matthew 28. He says, "Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations." That word nations in Greek is ethnos, which means every people group. He says, go out and share this with every people group, because Jesus is about what? Restoring all things. Every tribe, every tongue, every nation. He says, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teach these new disciples all the commands that I've given you. And be sure of this, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. In other words, I'm going to be there until all of this is restored, as I said. And so what he says is, I want you to go out and tell people about what I've done for them. Tell them so that relationships can be restored. And then he says, I want you to live out this new way of living. Here's how I know he wants us to live it out. He says, go and teach them to obey all that I've commanded you. And in other words, Christianity isn't just a belief system. Christianity is an invitation to become sons and daughters of the King. And to live out the kingdom principles. Let's go back to Jesus again and see what he says about living out these kingdom principles. It's another fascinating verse. Matthew 25, 34 through 36. And Jesus is talking about the end times. And he's gathering all the people of the world together. And Jesus says, and then the King, which is him, he's speaking of himself, third person. Then the King will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. He says, for I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me into your home. He says, I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you cared for me. I was in prison, and you visited me. That in and of itself is just powerful of what Jesus is saying there. And Jesus, because he's got people on his right, and he's got people on his left. It's not a political thing, by the way. But anyways, he's got people on his right, and he's got people on his left. And he says the same thing to the people on the left, except for he changes it a little bit. He says, I was hungry, and you didn't feed me. I was naked and you didn't clothe me. I was thirsty and you didn't do this. And both groups answer the same way. They say, Lord, when did we see you hungry? When did we see you thirsty? You know, when did we see you in prison and not visit you? And Matthew 25:40, he says this, "And the king will say to you, I tell you the truth, when you did it to one of the least of my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me." Wow, that really puts it in perspective. And in other words, Jesus is identifying himself with the poorest of the poor. And he subsequently is suggesting strongly that when we don't care for others, we're not caring for him. You know, I was thinking about it this week, and I thought, isn't it interesting that when Jesus hung on the cross, he identified with us and our sin, right? He identified with us and our spiritual poverty. He dealt with sin, because I bring nothing to the table, right? When God says, I demand holiness and righteousness, I'm like, okay, what do I do? And so Jesus identifies with me and my spiritual poverty and takes my sin upon that cross. And now he's doing something here. He's saying, okay, I've identified with you and your poverty. I want you to go out and identify with others and their poverty. I want you to identify in their brokenness. In fact, when you see them, I want you to love on them as if it were me. Because that's what he did for us, right? And the Father loved us. He sent his Son. And it's almost as if Jesus is saying, if you miss seeing me in the least of these, you probably missed seeing yourself and seeing me and what I did for you on that cross. So let me talk to you, those of you that call Jesus Lord and Savior. Do you catch that? Do you see that he identified with you in your poverty? He identified with you in your brokenness? And now he's asking you. He's asking you to do the same, to go out and see him in others. And that's really what we're doing here today, is seeing Jesus in others. Identifying the brokenness in others and recognizing we can do something. So Jesus did on the cross. He was able to do something. A few years ago, we did a Barefoot Sunday. And this lady, she's originally from the Philippines, she came up to me after the service. And she said to me, she said, "So, Pastor, can I get you some shoes later today?" I said, "Yeah, that's not a problem." And, you know, I looked down and she had some shoes on her feet. And to be honest, I was looking at them going, they don't look like they cost a lot of money. I mean, I said, "You don't want to donate the shoes that you have?" And she said, "Oh no, Pastor, I can't give up these shoes." So I thought maybe they were special shoes or something. And she said, "The shoes that I'm giving to Jesus. And these shoes aren't good enough for Jesus. And man, did I feel like a schmuck with the shoes that I gave that day." But then I eventually got over it because I thought, well, Jesus needs a lot of shoes. and my shoes will work. But I thought about it, and this lady, she went out and she bought some shoes and she brought them back later that day, and then she handed it to me. I said, this lady gets it. She gets it better than I do. She's not just serving the poor. We're not just doing a good thing. We're doing a God thing. We are Jesus, who identified with us on the cross. We're identifying with him, and we are seeing him in the poor. We're seeing him in the brokenness all around us. And so today, we're believing good news. We're believing that Jesus is going to restore all things. That Jesus is going to restore and renew all relationships. And so we proclaim that. But we're doing something else. We're fighting against the sin within myself that says, keep things for yourself. And Jesus says, I'll take care of you. You know, give that away. And we're helping lift people out of poverty so that they can know and experience the good news. That they can know that God is restoring all things. So are we changing the world? Yeah, we're changing the world. We're changing the world one pair of shoes at a time. And we're going to change the world one person at a time. How are we going to transform the area around us? One person at a time. We're going to share the good news. We're going to believe the good news. And we're going to show the good news to others. Let me pray for you. And if you have shoes that you want to donate that you haven't done so already, we'll let you do that. And we'll have the worship team come up and lead us in a song.